Hey everybody, welcome to the Wednesday edition of The Daily Friend. This is your lunchtime briefing. All the things you need to know in the world of news, analysis and opinion. Today I have a crack of a show, which will be a special and ongoing feature every Wednesday, is the economics, an inside look into economic data in the country. And the guru we have on all things economics here at the IRR is of course the head of, or rather the chief economist, Ian Cruickshanks. Ian, a good day to you. How are you doing?
Good day to you, Sue Cicely. And I say it is. It's a very pleasant winter day today.
Yes, it is. It's actually rather lovely. Also joining us in studio, of course, is a voice you guys are quite familiar with. It is our IRR analyst here at the Institute. It is Mr. Herman Pretorius. Sorry, Herman. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, and yourself, Sile?
Fantastic. Guys, we're going to hop straight into it. And I think, as I said, the conversation is going to revolve a lot around the economic data. Ian, we're looking straight to you. What should we know in the economy? What's the interesting tidbits that we should be aware of?
What we must acknowledge is the fact that foreigners are still close to abandoning South Africa in recognition of the likelihood of a ratings downgrade and no immediate prospects of any pickup in the economy. What we're seeing is the continued capital outflow. Foreigners sold so far this year 90 billion rands worth of securities on the JSE. What is interesting is not just SA Inc., SA Incorporated, ordinary stocks and shares that they've been selling. They've been selling government bonds. In other words, they're expressing a view that they're unsure of whether South Africa will be able to service its own government debt. Well, this is a real condemnation. And if that happens, it just does suggest we're getting closer towards a ratings review.
Ian, this is super concerning because we're seeing a real bleeding now, yes, of hard cash out of escaping, if you will, our equities markets, escaping the bond markets, and really making it tougher for those of us who are in the country and obviously businesses, right? Businesses, sure, that are dependent on investment. We've had this conversation before on the show, haven't we?
About
investor confidence.
Yes.
It seems to be at an all-time low and plumbing further lows, isn't it?
I'm not going to say it's at an all-time low, mm-hmm, but it is certainly very low, and it seems to be heading lower. Mm. And in fact, today we're getting a data point which will be interesting in pointing us in the direction of recovery or still scraping along the bottom. That is retail sales for June. They were up by 2% year on year. That's May against May a year ago. It will be interesting to see if there's any pickup in June, because this will point then towards the overall second quarter. Are we heading towards a second quarter of contracting in the economy? If so, that just says the opportunity or the chances of being classified as being in a recession are increasing. And that is very bad news towards our ability for accessing foreign capital and the confidence that company directors have in starting or expanding existing businesses.
And that retail number is important, isn't it? In the context of the South African economy being sort of driven, is it 60% by consumer spending?
60% of all activity in the economy comes from domestic spending, consumer activity. So this will just say, I think, if that is starting to slip lower, then we really have no chance of new business being created, of job creation, of all the factors that we so desperately need.
Herman, I think Ian is painting a very vivid picture here around just how difficult things are becoming for the South African consumer, the South African individual, the South African family, insofar as, you know, the ever-shrinking, you know, okay, let me take a step back. Last month, we saw a sharp rise in the unemployment level. That speaks to people obviously losing jobs, losing incomes. When that happens, obviously, I think we're seeing now other economic data beginning to point to that slowdown, that general slowdown. I always, always, always say this. People are suffering, and we're seeing these numbers scrape the bottom of the barrel, if you will, because of the bad policy environment and really the self-inflicted damage that we're doing to ourselves, isn't it?
Absolutely. And one thing I've learned in my time here at the Institute is Ian always asking, What does it mean for us? What does it mean for us? And let's have the listener ask it, what does it mean for us as a country? It means more people without jobs. It means fewer opportunities for jobs. It means more hungry kids. It means more hungry households. And hungry people, as Ian always says, hungry people become angry people. So we're heading towards a situation where South Africans, this isn't just, you know, zeros disappearing off some banker's, you know, computer screen. This is bread and butter issues. South Africans are going to become hungry and they are going to be angry, and they will be right to be angry. But where they channel that anger is something unsure, because it won't be at the government for its failures. I hope we can channel it in that direction.
Ian, I'm going to come back to you because, we almost speak of these numbers in almost abstract sometimes, and we forget that we're talking about actual companies, real companies that employ real people behind this. And I'm going to zoom back into the retail numbers, which we haven't seen yet because they are due a bit later today. But let's assume for a moment that we see a drop in that number. What sort of impact has it been having on the retail sector at the moment? Is the retail sector healthy and, you know, they'll just be taking a bit of a knock? But are they already in a bit of trouble?
Is the retail sector healthy? No, because the retail sector's sales are growing at a lower rate than the population rate. So that means there's hardly any growth at all. And in some sectors, some of the big distributors are actually having negative growth. They're having contractions. And I think that means if sales are coming down, then we know that the situation is dire. Just take Eskom, for instance. Okay, it's getting out of the retail sector. They're selling less electricity than they did a year ago. What does that mean? There's less demand. Yes, there may be greater efficiencies operating, but I think that we can't expect too much of that. What we're seeing is that the basic fundamentals underlining the economy are shrinking, and that's pointing to the difficulty, as you just said, of job creation being a non-event, and the possibility of the cost of funding, the difficulty in accessing funding, growing all the time.
And I must bring this up, just to bring us back to the retail number, because I have a little bit of interest in this insofar as, you know, we've seen in the news cycle, big retailers struggling.
Yes.
I mean, Edcon comes to mind, you know, their CEO, Graham Patterson, you know, sort of saying, hey, we need to pull out all the stops if, on the one hand, we're to preserve Edcon as a group, but also, you know, at the same time, see her go back into profitability. But Edcon is just one part of a very large picture, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at another big group like Massmart, for instance. Here the Americans were going to show us how to run retail in South Africa. Well, they have made thundering huge losses. Mm-hmm. And they've now brought in a new CEO from America. They're hoping he will turn it around with new strategies. But there isn't the buying power. Mm. This is very difficult to come and bat up against. Even ShopRite Checkers, the leader, the outstanding management company in the retail sector, has had a dramatic slowdown in sales. Yes, they're still positive, but nowhere near where they were a year or 2 years ago. It's very indicative of the state of our economy.
And this is part of my concern. We're placing a lot of pressure on the CEOs, the captains of industry. And again, it's not just retail. I mean, you made the point about Eskom just now. But my fear, Ian, is that we're placing a lot of pressure on the CEOs and obviously consequently management and the workforce. And it's all happening in an environment which is incredibly scary for some people insofar as the prospect of job losses.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you to play a bit of a forecaster for us. And I'm going to put the question to you this way. Ian, we're seeing the numbers point to a further slide in reality. What are the prospects of the retail sector bouncing back, and what needs to happen really if we're to see a on the one hand decent bounce back, but in realistic terms a good bounce back where people are very profitable again?
What could stimulate a bounce back, a recovery in retail spending? More jobs created, more people actually employed. Is that happening? No. Absolutely not. The number of people unemployed is higher than the number who are employed. So that is a very telling comment. That just says that we're with the major driver, the basic driver for improved participation and activity is not there. And I think that with that in mind, no, the answer is to definitely negative for your question.
Interestingly, I at this point, and Ian is the economic genius, but I just have to say that the average South African we shouldn't be falling into the trap of it has always been this way, South Africa, we cannot get out of it. South Africa has seen huge economic improvement when sensible policy has been followed. So if we're going to ask what needs to change, well, it's always dangerous in South Africa to say, oh, the good old days, because usually people think you're referring to pre-1994. But if we say the good old days, we're looking at the early 2000s. We're looking at the late 1990s, when unemployment was coming down, when the economy was growing at 2, 3, 5% per year. People's actual improvement in life quality. So if we need to get back to that, we really need to get back to the good old days of good policy in the days of Mbeki.
Now, how are we going to get back to that? Well, I would say the first thing is to see that government starts living reasonably within its means. What we are doing is, if any one of us starts overspending in our personal bank accounts, we get a call from the bank manager who says, I'd like you to come and visit me and tell me how you're going to repay this. And of course, what we're seeing now is we're not giving any plans. Where are the structure? Where is the plans for reduced spending? Where is the cutback in the number of public sector employees, one of the biggest expenses of government? Until we see that, then I'm afraid return to the heyday, the good days, is unlikely in that foreseeable future. That is what we're facing right now, a complete change in strategy by those who are pulling the purse strings.
Ian, I'm going to shift us a little bit, but it's still on the issue of jobs, employment. Yes. If there's one sector, we were just discussing retail sector now. If there's one sector in this country that has been struggling and has been struggling for a very long time, and really in some cases we're seeing them close up shop and leave South Africa, is the mining sector in this country.
Yes.
They are under immense, immense strain.
Huge.
And they're dealing, on the one hand, it's threefold, isn't it? On the one hand, it's a global market who the price of a lot of the ore and a lot of the metals that they produce has been rather subdued, hasn't been as good as it was maybe in the heydays of, you know, the sort of early 2000s. The second element is government policy. They are they're in the crosshairs, if you will, of predatory politicians who see the mining sector as a conduit for fleecing them. Mm. And of course, the third one is they're dealing with incredibly adversarial unions, unions who will go to extreme, extreme levels of violence. I don't know what to call it, uncooperativeness, if you will, if that even is a word, in order to get their way, often in spite of the economic realities. Ian, I've set out a picture, three things that affect the mining industry. How is it right now? What is a big issue right now in the mining industry?
Well, let's start with labor. Labor has got to understand there's a straight line between productivity and reward. Yes, the employers do want to pay them more, provided they produce more. Are they prepared to do that? Well, that has not been evident at all. And look at the gap there is, the mudslinging there is between the unions and the employers already. Just take, for instance, the Sibanye, the gold sector,
yes.
Never mind individual mines, where the miners are asking for a minimum increase in their basic wage of 17,000 rand per month. That's 48% more than they have per 48%. 17,000 is the basic wage. Now, you know, that's a pretty generous amount. That is 48% more than getting on average right now. And what are the mines themselves saying? They're offering them between 300 and 350 rand on an annualized basis for the next 3 years. Well, there's going to be a big upset here. The unions are saying that's a slap in the face, and you can't help but say yes. But on the other hand, they're not producing more output. And there's the problem. Where's the money going to come from? Yes, it may come from the gold mines because they've got a higher, they've got looking at $1,500 an ounce now. The beginning of the year, it was just over $1,000 an ounce. Mm. That's massive. But the volumes aren't growing, and that's the difficulty. So I think that that's unlikely. You know, there are two other factors, mm-hmm. just to mention. And the first is the security of assets. Mm. We keep on moving the goalposts in these respects, the BEE regulations and other regulations, and we're not ploughing any new capital back into operations, not creating a more investment-friendly attitude towards the investors, towards the investment community, towards the capitalists as a whole. And I think, thirdly, we've got the problems with Eskom. Until Eskom can guarantee a cost-effective, reliable electricity supply, we're not going to get any new jobs created, whether it's in mining or agriculture or merchandising or manufacturing. It's just not going to happen. That is what we're up against right now. And particularly with mining, where there have been massive cuts in total numbers employed, this could well carry on.
Again, a rather depressing environment to be a CEO in, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
A lot of stress. You're facing assault from, you're fighting wars on three fronts, if anything, not just two, which, you know, which sank, Bonaparte and et al. Herman, I'm looking to you on this. There's something significant in the story to be told by a unionism in this country that just refuses to accept reality and insists on going down a pathway of, even if it's self-destructive, right? Because there have been immense job layoffs, often as a result of extended strike periods, companies not being as productive as they should be, companies being in debt. A lot of mines are heavily indebted. A terrible union, a toxic union culture in the mining sector, does it really help the employees?
No. Next question. No, I'm kidding. No, it doesn't. And I remember Margaret Thatcher, when she was leader of the opposition before she became prime minister, she got a lot of flack for saying the unions were a minority interest. Mm. And then people were like, oh, they're so important. How could you say that? And she said, oh, numerically, they are a minority interest. They are not looking out for the interest of the majority of the British people. And the fact is, in South Africa, we've got the same. The unions are a minority interest. They do not speak for society as a whole. But here I actually have a question perhaps to you guys. Mm-hmm. Is there any way a CEO, a manager, can get his employees on board saying, guys, every rand you make for this company, 10 cents go there. This goes to tax, this goes to salaries, this goes to... Is there a way that employers can perhaps get their employees into the loop, explaining how these expenses are crippling these companies to kind of start weakening the grip of unions?
Often I tend to find that unions in this country act as gatekeepers, and it becomes very questionable, therefore, whether as there is feedback from a company in terms of certain demands made, whether that feedback reaches the ordinary worker on the ground is actually kind of questionable. If it doesn't, for example, reach the worker in a really twisted fashion, like, oh, look at what big capital is saying. They're basically saying you don't deserve more. But hang on, why are they saying that? Surely there's a reason. But I digress. Your question is a very important one insofar as how Thatcher dealt with the unions. Mm-hmm. And ironically, she dealt with the union with the same name as our National Union of Mine Workers, mm-hmm. at that time led by a guy named Arthur Scargill. The way she dealt with the unions was almost bringing in democracy into the union environment. At the point of a strike, that actually you have a ballot box, and not the open sort of in a crowd, hands up, which is prone to intimidation, election, an actual secret ballot box where the workers decide whether they want to go on strike or not. And in that environment, you actually quite found a situation where the vast majority of workers wouldn't want to go on a strike, and really it was the minority interest that you speak to that got riled up by the union bosses. I think something like that could work in our country, where you don't take away the fundamental right for someone to withdraw their labor. You know, you can keep that, but it happens in more rational and reasonable environments. Ian?
Yes, I think it's important that there has to be a site by the miners, of seeing how the union managers, the union organizers themselves, arrive for meetings in the latest German upmarket luxury vehicle, in the latest men's fashion suit.
Yep.
And there they are in their overalls, of which they only have one set. Now, I think that this has to be pointed out. Perhaps management could do more in this respect of saying, look at your leaders. But, of course, they've had so little for so long that the memories have not been erased, and that is a problem. In addition to which, there's still a strong memory as to how the mines themselves, the mine management, have treated those who are demonstrating, firing live ammunition at them, firing them in the back. You know, that just says, hey, this is unreasonable. We've got both sides to give a little bit, to give a lot.
Absolutely. And fellas, on that note, let me say thank you very much to the both of you for this really fantastic conversation as we really begin to unpack the economic data. And as I said, this will be a regular feature. Every Wednesday we'll have Ian Cruickshanks in the studio providing the latest economic data and us having a conversation around that so that you, the listener, are empowered with firstly the knowledge and also the arguments around it so that we can begin to turn around the tide of an ailing and sinking economy. The best way we can do that is to have the ongoing conversation. Ian, it looked like you wanted to have something to say.
No, I just say that the necessity for a voice of reason in management and labor consultations has never been more important, and I'm sure we can provide positive input there.
Absolutely. And maybe on that note, let me wrap it up. Guys, thank you so much for listening to your lunchtime briefing, the Wednesday lunchtime briefing of the Daily Friend Show. You will find us again on Friday as we also release the weekly televised show that rounds up the week, the Daily Friend Weekly Roundup. That'll be out on Friday at 10 a.m. And of course, the Friday edition of this show, the Lunchtime Report at 12. Remember, you can always support the show and us as your analysts on the show by becoming a friend of the IRR. This is our crowdfunding campaign, how we raise money to be able to afford the content and the analysts and all that good stuff. And you can become a friend of the IRR by SMSing your name to 32823. An SMS will cost you 1 rand, and terms and conditions apply. Or hey, find us online at irr.org.za/join, and you can sign up a monthly debit order of 90 rand there. That's 3 cups of coffee, guys, that you would have spent in the month. And it's those funds that help us get into the battle of ideas and to bring you this good content. Guys, thank you so much for listening. I will see you guys on Friday.